Accession number 9364, reel 20.
Mr. Bethel, reel 20. How long did you stay a prison warder altogether in Malta?
About 7 years, to do with the internment camp and civil prison.
So were you there when the war ended?
No, because I was on the second front. What happened, I'm trying to keep some order for you. They sent me to the civil prison anyway, gave me a prison there, and I think the detention barracks people particularly wanted it clear, for they didn't want civilians and that interfering, you know, with their job. But eventually two men were killed, locked up, and I hated this because I personally would never lock a man up. I took them to this, you come with me, there's a heavy raid on. I should be as safe as I can, and I will keep you as safe as I can. But one of the places we used to visit and think we were safe, we've blown the hell. So I want men to die. So they decided with the Wolf case, which took place in the Supreme Court, and was difficult for myself, because Wolf was a Jew and a genius, a very clever man. Actually, you're a load muck, you are, you're a damn nuisance. I said, you know, I respond to kindness and not to fear. I comb my hair for Mr. Millier. I'm sure he'd do the same for me, for I'm Lord Muck, the internee. Brilliant, a Free State reporter in his own right. You know, you wondered who the hell you were dealing with at times. You didn't know whether they were our own agents, whose agents they were. With you, I couldn't imagine hating England, because we had given them Jerusalem.
So what happened after that case?
Well, then they deported them. And I was lost my job, right? They said, well, you're no use, brother, any use to us now, as we've got no internment camp.
Why did you lose your job?
Beg your pardon?
Why did you lose your job?
Well, because there was no more internees. The civil government didn't want me. So, but the Royal Navy decided they did. So they built me a prison in Verdala Barracks, which was a school. And they built me a prison, and underneath it they put 10,000 tons of TNT for the CNC landing, 1 million gallons of petrol, and 1 million gallons of paraffin. And they said, Bethel, don't you let anybody come in here, in case they get blown up, we might get hurt. There were two tennis courts, which I liked. Mac, the master miller of the dockyard, who still ran his little mill, used to come up and play me tennis sometimes. He had the most amazing things in it. He had the... It fascinated me. He had the pedigree of our king and queen. Somewhere in this region, I heard that our king would appeal to God in a stammering voice. And the fact that Windsor, did you know this? The fact that Windsor abdicated was to make the prophecy come true. Because his brother, you never heard the king speak, because you're young. I forget. Oh God, why am I flipping old?
What prisoners did you have in this new prison that was built for you?
The Verdala was a school, blown down. Admiral Leatham come out to see me. They all came to see me. The governors, the admirals, and Leatham come up, and he wanted to inspect his supplies for Italy. For the start the invasion of Italy. Everything was all right in the dockyard now. Instead of, we saw the Spitfire gradually begin to make its presence felt. And we had a convoy came through from the east. Not a ship sunk. I wonder if it hadn't been better if we'd have done that in the first place instead of having Pedestal, which was the plan to get food through to us by the other route, you see. Pantelleria was frightening, and Sicily were difficult to pass.
What were your duties at this point?
I was in charge of the detention barracks now, having lost the commandant of the...
With Navy prisoners again?
Navy prison. And Admiral Leatham came up to see if his stores were all right for the Sicily landing. They weren't interested in me or my prison, really. As long as I kept it safe for them, I could kick anybody out. It was a blooming great barracks, or equivalent to a great big barracks. Had a huge hall in it, which was blown down, and two tennis courts, a hockey pitch, and these Victorian lines, which were fascinating. Can you imagine a great lump of sandstone, which Malta is, and these magnificent lines built by Queen Victoria, and these kind of ramparts which were secondary to the original forts like San Angelo's and Almo, which forts against the Dragut and his people.
How long did you stay at this prison?
Not too long, about 6-8 months. Then I got a letter. My wife had left Malta and flew over Alamein with the two girls. The last, when Pedestal failed, I was sent to the drone to take Petrol round to the Spitz with these chaps who they were determined would not go to prison. They wanted to get in wherever they wanted. They thought they'd been safer in the dockyard. La Ferla thought he'd be safer if he got back to Rabat. When he got to Rabat, he had his head blown off. See what I mean? Everybody was playing drafts and saying to be safer if I was there. I think I'd like to be here. And so on. So they sent me out there. And there were 3 miles of burnt-out plain on Luca. There were two regiments filling in bomb holes. The second-in-command at Luca said to me, you know, I wouldn't worry about sending your children home. He said, there's 14 ships coming through, and they're all but covered, they're all but through. That was Pedestal, where poor Chillingsworth and his Cardi float.
And what was the letter that was sent to you to terminate your service with the prison office?
Oh, no letter at all, dear. You can go back. I don't remember if they did send me a letter, but I just returned stores and left. And Captain Clark, Royal Marines, I was really part of the detachment of San Angelo, seconded to wherever you went, you know. And
so where did they post you to?
I went up. My wife left by plane with the two girls. And they didn't come home by the normal route. They came home by the Cape. Terribly worrying. And the second in command said to me prior to Pedestal, the day before the Manchester was sunk and all those ships went, he said, you know, I wouldn't worry about sending your wife home yet, Bethel. And he said, it seems all right. There's 14 ships coming through. They're all safe. They're all right. So don't worry. So I went back to the drone to take my job on with running these prisoners round with the petrol. The thing was, you see, you had to get the Spets up in the air. The only place that was safe was in the air. If you could get... We had 20 minutes to get their reserve tank off and get the pilot in the air for his own safety. At Talcani Island, there was about 30 or 40 Spits destroyed. I saw 200 bombers attack it. And they say, people told me afterwards, and you can bet your life it's more true than the history book will be, that the drone was completely deserted. There wasn't a soul on it where they'd been bombed so severely. Papers were left in just where they were, you know, and so forth. And so the great point was, get up there, get these bad lads. I said, look, listen, if you're scared, I don't want you, don't come with me. If you're not, and they weren't scared, they were brave. We went round, you see, you go to a pilot, and the pilots were about 200, 300 miles apart, or yards apart, to stop what had happened at Taukali, which I watched that raid, and my God, they seemed to me that they were able to keep on tipping it in. And anyway, you went round, you say to the pilot, do you want the oil, sir? And you say, yeah, 1 gallon, and you give him a gallon of oil, or like you would on the car, you know, just say you want 4 gallons, give him 4 drums, or whatever it was. You had it in this lorry. Of course, if you hit the lorry, we possibly would have gone up. And these herbs, they were most brave. They were enjoying it. They said, come on, do you want to see these old planes, your staff? I said, no, I want to get on the drone. Don't you? No. I said, I did go and have a look at one or two of them, but they were no nuisance to me, and there were no further nuisance when I went there. I had a very good name in the barracks itself for being sensible and not spiteful. So in the morning I went back on my old bike, on an old bike I rode, my knees used to knock because I'd only had a slice of bread all day. And he said, oh God, I said, what's wrong, sir? He said, there's only 3 ships left. That was Pedestal, the Ioho and 2 others, Dorsetshire, I think it was one other. The destroyers were most gallant. They were marvellous. Do you know, glasses, lemonade or anything? They were marvellous. And, oh God, how brave they were. I can only tell you that. I was down to Penelope when one raid on 5 Dock took place, when they called it a pepper pot. My hat was blown a blooming mile, and 200 bombers attacked one little cruiser in 5 Dock. They did hit her. I did, with shrapnel, but made holes all over it. They called it a pepper pot afterwards. And I remember getting my bike and coming back over all this rubble. I had to climb out. The dock was the second dock round it, you know. And when I got to the top, about 200 yards, 300 yards at the top, Captain of Penelope was on, he was on a bike too. So I said to him, your ship's all right, sir. I said, you've got a few holes, but you're all right. As far as I know, no one's killed. He obviously relieved him, and he pushed off down his way, and I came off my way. But,
what happened to you next?
Well, that was Penelope and 5 Dock was most brave. There was a destroyer sunk in every dock. They were gallant. I can only say that. No, anyway, then my wife finally arrived in England, having been on, 2 or 3 months run. And lots died coming home. Not my wife didn't, thank God, but lots of the other wives that came home by that sea route lost their lives. They were torpedoed. And I heard a story of a chap on board a ship machine gunning anybody who tried to board the boats, you know, to try and protect the women, but it was pretty severe. Anyway, then a letter came to me from Malta from my wife. She was ill, which I couldn't wonder at, and I suppose really I should have sent them home. And she wrote and said, I'm not well, I've got an operation to come, hysterectomy. And I appealed to the Navy to let me come home. which is just about the last thing I wanted to, because I had my own command. I was receiving command money there. I was in charge of this small prison, which was no bother. Tennis courts available, really lovely, and food, and dockyard. In the dockyard, where you couldn't show another match, lit a match, there were floodlights in the dockyard. Contemptuous of the enemy, absolute contempt. Switch on the lights everywhere, and so forth. And one wonders if God didn't just, Dobby said, the hand of God over Malta, and I agree with him, because we were there. We were, as I felt right from the start, sure that we should be all right. I don't know why.
Did they say you could come home?
Yes, they said, yes, you can come home. But don't forget, even so, I had pounds and pounds in my pockets you couldn't spend. And all silver money was disappeared from the island. They issued shilling notes and half-crown notes. And I had some of those. They were issued in the First World War, apparently, and used in the Second. Because the poor Maltese said, if we're going to be taken over by the Germans, might as well have some silver, 2 bob bits and half-crown bits to barter. It was only his life we were playing with.
And how did you travel home?
They sent me on a boat from Malta, and in a small convoy with one little corvette, you know, looking after you. Couldn't believe it, one tiny ship like that was protecting you with a little pop gun on. And we got opposite Algiers, and they had an oiler alongside of us. And I was watching her one minute, and the next minute she was torpedoed. And I saw the mast, which was nice and straight one minute, divide into two. And then all you could see was little flashes in the water where the chaps had jumped in the water with their life belts on, with these lamps which glittered and showed where they were. But we didn't lose anything else. And then we went into Gibraltar, and where I picked up the Samaria, a liner, and saw Jimmy Scott, or one of my old compatriots. Of course, in Malta, during all this siege, during all this period, we were more or less running home from home for so many people. Old shipmates, Chippy militia come and said, I'll be glad I'm in the Mediterranean Ridge. He said, I think it's better here. I said, do you, Chippy? He said, yes. And of course, he died on the Barham when she was blown up, as many others did.
What year was it that you went home?
About 43, I should think, dear. 42, 43, late 42, possibly. I cannot tell you offhand, but I went to Eastney Barracks, back to Eastney. And of course, then the build-up for the Second Front came about. And Lonsdale and Bone, the two that used to play the guitar with my daughter, and she used to sing with them, and they were classical to a great degree, and they were really nice guitar players. They used to sing So Deep Is the Night and all that kind of thing, you know. It was really beautiful, especially when there was a bit of peace, which was rare. And the chaps used to come and visit us from the Fleet. Ted Lurie, Big Brutes and No Brains, the man with the microscope. Various other people, Sergeant and Marines by the dozen. The coxswain of the Admiral used to come up there to see us, and it was a little bit of heaven. Imagine the Penelope, no farther away from that school, is to this house, just the end of the road. And one minute you're being bombed to hell, and the next minute you were singing a shanty in old shanty town. You couldn't believe it, with Hazel and Shirley singing away. And
when you applied to leave Malta, was this just leave of absence, or were you leaving it for good?
Leaving it for good, dear, because I could have done what you suggest, said, can I go home for a while? I never thought of that. I didn't have any intelligence. I know the captain of Angelo was really up the pole. He thought, we built your prison, we got you what we wanted, and now you want to come home. What could I do? So instead of that, I applied to come home. I said, I've been here 9 years. 7 years actually on that particular time, but 2 years previously. And what do you do? I mean, you go through that kind of thing, and then you say, at last I've got a little heaven here on my own, and I've got to give it up. So I was talking about Geordie Curry. This is funny. I had pockets full of money. Couldn't spend it. Geordie had come from the Middle East. Geordie was broke. He was a corporal Marines. And we could buy stout. You could buy, spend money. See, and to me, I had pockets full of the damn stuff. Couldn't get rid of it. I used to look at Geordie and say, you broke, Geordie. Would you like a bottle of stout, a couple of bottles? Shall we have a little party on our own? Geordie would say, well, I don't see why we shouldn't. I've got no money. I used to say to him, well, I can pay, so I used to buy this beer. And of course, Geordie was a corporal afterwards, Marine policeman up here. And it was funny, because I was paying all the time. It didn't matter tuppence to me. I thought, these fools are actually giving you bottles of stout for money, which I'd not been able to spend. The last thing sold in Malta was 3 pennies of peanuts. Or 6 broad beans, seeds. You could have them for threepence. And that was the last thing you could buy. Anyway, we got to Gibraltar. Gibraltar had experience of... We had the experience of Alexander, where the 2 ships had been sabotaged. With these one-man submarine things. And in order to stop this, the Gibraltarians had arranged depth charges all night. So right through the night, you'd hear these bang going off where the depth charges were going up, so that it would just distract anybody coming around on one of those little things. And then we ploughed on towards home. And in the Bay of Biscay, we were attacked by flying boats. By German bombers, anyway. I remember seeing the ship behind us, thinking she was hit. There must have been an awful lot of times that the Navy must have thought that, because you see this bomb go off, you know, and a great explosion. And you think, that's got her, she's gone west. And then eventually, after the dirt clears away, you see the ship you thought had been sunk coming up behind you, clearing the debris or whatever it was, the water and that went up, you know, you couldn't believe it. We had a NACAC cruiser with us, and they fought splendidly. They put up a terrific barrage for such a tiny ship, and we were saved. Eventually, we landed in England. I was glad to come and see my wife, who looked ill, and she had this operation, and I pushed around in a wheelchair for some while, but I was heartbroken, really, because I knew I'd never have a son, which I'd hoped to have. And they suddenly said, now it's the second front for you. And I thought, is there no peace? I come back to this house, who turns up? Lonsdale, Bone, and a number of others. Denny, who eventually married Hazel, he was going. They were all going. Father's turn to be all turn. I've got to come too. Round here, there's nothing but tanks. They built up this D-Day effort where they got all these the assault craft in there, and they eventually sent me to Silla as Sergeant Major. A job I hated. I didn't want to be a usurper to the chap who's there. He was quite a good chap. And I didn't see what good. I wouldn't not been with the Navy for what, 7 years.
Had you been performing any duties at Eastney Barracks?
Yeah, Company Q.
What's
that? We run around. Eastney Barracks was quite something, and as much as you got baby-faced kids coming up to you. Do you know of any hazardous action, Sarge? And you think, you're a baby, you want to go and fight, do you? And I thought of what I saw on telly. Did you see that Somme business? Oh, God. You see these old men, they were saying how they were told they were given this terrific bombardment on the Germans. And they were told to walk out of the trenches and walk towards the enemy. They said that there won't be, the barbed wire will be blown to bits with this terrific, and when they got there, there's more men killed there than any other war ever, in any other battle. It was terrific.
What was it like at Eastney Barracks then with these young boys?
Eastney Barracks was, I was big-headed. Dickie Diamond, 28 operations on his face, on the Illustrious. The Illustrious came into Malta, been badly hit. We protected her, singly took the bombing from her, as I've explained to you. And Dickie Diamond, I listened to Lord Hankey speak in the Sergeant's Mess Eastney, and the topic he chose was attention to detail. And I thought he was brilliant. He spoke for an hour, and you could have heard a pin drop. I believe he was one of our top Secret Service people.